Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events, and today we are going to talk more about jury trials done by Zoom. The first Zoom trial was held in Texas not too long ago. We're going to talk about how that trial went and what it means for Zoom jury trials going forward. So we've gotten some questions on this, and this is kind of back on the coronavirus topic train, but we're going to hit it today. If you guys have anything you want us to talk about, you can find us on all social media platforms at Tragos Law. You can hit us up on there, ask us any questions, and we try to get to every one of them. So for now, let's talk about Zoom.
On that midnight train.
All right, so to talk about trials by Zoom, we're going to hit just very briefly what we've already spoken about a little bit, and that is the difference between a bench trial and a jury trial. So Pete, take 2 seconds, just tell about what the difference is and why it's such a big difference when using Zoom.
It's real simple, because a bench trial literally means that the judge is not only the trier of law, but the trier of fact, as opposed to a jury trial where the 6 or 12 people, depending on where you are, actually are the ones that make a decision about the facts.
So the reason that a Zoom trial is so much easier if it's a bench trial versus a jury trial is you're only dealing with the judge. And frankly, most of the time, the facial expressions or body language of a judge is far less important than that of a jury. And we already do hearings and depositions and things like that by Zoom. So doing a bench trial by Zoom is really no different than just a hearing, because the judge is making all of the decisions. So what we're going to focus on today, and we've been doing hearings by Zoom for months now, so that's not that big of a deal to have a bench trial by Zoom, which Florida has had one of those. And I think it went off without a hitch. So as we transition into talking about jury trials by Zoom, it's a huge difference. And none had been done prior to this one that was done in Texas in May. And just to kind of talk about, I'm going to tell you guys, my dad and Pete are here with me. I'm going to tell you guys about how it went, and then we can kind of jump into the issues. So they did jury selection over Zoom with 24 potential jurors. They had two judges explaining and guiding them through the process. They recorded this process and live streamed it on YouTube. They were told, and they being the potential jurors, were told to make their home like a courtroom atmosphere, making it quiet and private. They used Zoom breakout rooms because it was hard to see all of the jurors at once on a big Zoom group call. And if anybody's used Zoom out there, which I'm sure you have, it's like the Brady Bunch is what they said, where all these different squares with everybody's face being really small. So instead, they set them up into two breakout rooms on two screens so you could see everybody's faces bigger. And during jury selection, there was an issue, I guess, with connectivity or something, and the judge was talking to one of the lawyers, and they were questioning an individual juror or potential juror, and when the lawyers went to talk to the judge on the side, the potential juror got up, took a phone call, put his headphones down. They came back, tried to talk to him, but he wasn't hearing them because his headphones were on the table, so they had to wait till he came back and sat down before they could keep talking to him again. So there were some hitches in the process, but that's generally how they did it. It was a week-long trial, but the jurors were only there for 1 or 2 days, and we'll talk about why that is at the end.
One of the things that they did, and I think that bears explaining, is why they had two judges.
Okay.
They had a judge that was actually trying the case.
Right.
But they had a second judge, and that judge's total responsibility was dealing with the jurors. And the reason they had that was because the judge trying the case isn't supposed to have ex parte communications with jurors. So if a technical glitch happened, the judge trying the case can't just focus in and talk to the one juror so that nobody else can hear him. But the other judge was able to do that so that they could correct the technical problems, not taint the judge who was trying the case. And so they had to have two judges there, which again, when we talk about judicial economy, did that really pay off for them to have two judges sitting at a trial?
Well, the truth is he probably did it just to get a feel for it, because it's the first one. I don't know if you really need a judge to handle the technical issues or just to make sure that jurors are where they're supposed to be and paying attention. One of the cool things I thought was when they were reading the instructions to the jury, because they all the jurors themselves are muted, so they can't actually talk to the lawyers and the judge presiding. They gave them hand and arm signals. So, for example, they told them that, you know, to move your hands like a braking motion if you need a break. And they gave them some basic things like that just so they could communicate without actually having the sound on to avoid basically all the background noise that happens when you've got 24 people on, you know, on one Zoom call.
And like anything else, this is a learning experience. And they realized maybe they needed some additional things in this Zoom platform in order to do trials in an efficient way. But the second judge, again, acted as an intermediary for the jurors so that they didn't have to talk directly to the judge trying the case.
Right. So there's all sorts of issues kind of dealing with a jury trial by Zoom. And we're going to go through some of those now. So, Dad, that's another thing we've already kind of mentioned, so I want to go through it kind of quickly. Talk about the difference between a criminal trial that might be by Zoom and a civil jury trial that might be by Zoom. And talk about the confrontation clause.
Obviously, civil and criminal. Criminal, there's a lot more constitutional issues involved in a criminal case because a person's freedom is involved. So right to remain silent, confrontation clause, search and seizure, all those constitutional protections come into play in a criminal trial, which is why a criminal defendant, I think, has more objections to a trial by Zoom than a civil defendant would. Civil defendant, you're just talking about money. And in that kind of, in that context, you know, doing these little things that may be bending what we think a trial is may work in a civil case. I think it's going to be tougher in a criminal case. And it's going to be tougher to establish rules that protect an individual's constitutional rights in a Zoom trial platform.
Okay, so, and did you talk about the confrontation clause?
I mentioned it, but the confrontation clause. You have the right to face your accuser. That's what the Constitution says. Well, do you really face your accuser if the accuser is in Michigan, you're in Florida, and you're in Clearwater, and the jury's in Miami? You know, are you really facing your accuser? Are you really facing your witnesses? Are you really able to confront them under that scenario? Now, I will say that when it came to child witnesses,
which we've talked about this on other podcasts,
right,
but
they have developed rules that say that the child can be in a different room doing it by video for cross-examination.
Which so I'm sure they would use to push for Zoom trials.
And I show you, things are kind of moving that way.
You know, I don't know if, and we keep saying Zoom because really Zoom is the platform. I think they're geniuses.
They're not sponsoring this podcast.
Right. But nobody really heard of them that much. Well, some people may have.
Right.
But until this coronavirus, Zoom was just one of those many platforms.
And the reason that they're geniuses is they've been allowing everybody to do this for free. Obviously, there's going to come a point where they're going to charge people. But I don't know if Zoom is going to be the platform of choice to
video
do this.
Video conference, we'll call it.
Right. But the truth of the matter is, I think this very well may develop into something that is the standard going forward. Not today, not tomorrow, but definitely within the time that, Peter, you and I are going to be practicing.
See, I don't know if I agree with that. And we'll get into, I mean, obviously, my dad is going to have hard stances being as old school can be about looking people in the eye, reading body language, things like that. I think as important as it is constitutionally in criminal cases, I think it is just as important practically in civil cases for us to see how much we think a juror is into it, if they're paying attention. Because when you're talking about a civil trial, it's not just winning and losing, but it's also how big is the number. So even if you may win and prove that the other person's at fault, if a juror is not really paying attention or not really into it, that number is probably not going to be very big.
But you know what that means? That means the way we try cases is going to change.
Okay, that may be true.
It'll wind up being like a TV production. As a lawyer, our backgrounds are going to change. Meaning when you look at Zoom, right now, what do you see? The back of the wall?
So you think we're going to start filming our opening statements and just playing a video?
I think so. And you're going to be really, you know, working on emotions based on the whole, you know, presentation.
I don't know. Do you think
I think for a while, lawyers have wondered why we can't have video hearings. Now, I'm not talking about trials, but hearings. Why do we have to go down to the courthouse for a 15-minute hearing? Something that's even unopposed by the other side, but you still have to go to court.
Yeah.
So I think that this is going to make judges a lot more comfortable with doing remote hearings.
Okay, but so specifically we'll focusing on jury trials.
But does it go to trials? I think those are two different things.
I agree.
Let me jump in. You know it because you and I have done it where we go to a jury trial and some of the witnesses, like expert witnesses or treating physicians, we've pre-recorded their testimony.
And that's something I want to talk about. Yeah. So it's called a video deposition. So Pete, talk about what a video deposition is, what the purpose is of it, and then we'll talk about whether or not we like it at the end.
And we're talking about a deposition that memorializes testimony for trial. And what the difference is this is not a discovery deposition where you go in and ask a bunch of questions to kind of figure out what the person's opinion is. This is where both parties show up and actually ask the direct examination and cross-examination questions to the witness. It's all videotaped. And obviously there's a transcript, and you use that, you memorialize it to actually play it to the jury during the trial.
Right, and we usually hate it because it's boring.
Right.
The jurors stop paying attention. They usually don't respond as well to those. We'd much prefer to have a treating physician or somebody that did a surgery come in, look the jury in the eye, answer the questions that the other side has. The judge may have questions. The jury may have questions. It always works better, in my opinion, if the guy that or gal that did the surgery shows up and explains it to the jury with props or whatever they may use, diagrams, whatever. So that's one of my big issues with a Zoom jury trial is we've tried having some things where they just watch a TV screen, which is what they're going to be doing the entire trial now, and they absolutely don't respond as well from a plaintiff's point of view. They kind of get more bored and lulled to sleep with video depos. So that's one of my big issues with a Zoom jury trial is just the witnesses not having, and lawyers, like charismatic lawyers, explaining and being persuasive, I think are less persuasive as on a video or on a computer screen on Zoom.
Just keep in mind that the rule you're talking about is a civil rule. In civil cases, there's only really one rare exception in a criminal case, and that if someone may physically not be able to make it to trial because they're dying and you have to preserve their testimony.
You can do a expert depo by video in criminal cases. Your expert.
Only if the judge allows it.
Of course. That's the same thing with ours. No, the judge has to allow it. But
normally they don't.
Okay. And that's fair. But I'm saying most of the time, it's most of the time from our perspective, it is the same. It's somebody's dying. So you take their depo in case they die and then you can play the video in the trial.
Right.
Or we do it for experts because we don't want to make experts miss a day of surgeries and come
in
to.
In civil cases, can't you do a party depo? Can't you present to the jury their video without actually calling the witness?
No. A party? No. You can use it for impeachment, but you can't just choose to do a party depo by. I'm sure you can if everybody agrees to it and the judge allows it. We just had this where we had to do it because the defendant actually missed the trial date last time because she had a medical issue. So then the judge told us to take a video depo in case she doesn't show up again so we can just move forward with trial with her video depo. Right.
But that was because of the circumstance that we had had and all the parties basically agreed to it.
Yeah, you can't just say, I'm going to play this video instead of.
You know, I remember this somewhere, and I don't remember the name of the lawyer, but I distinctly remember there was a lawyer, and he basically did all of his trials, all the experts, all of the the treating physicians. He literally video recorded all of them and would come to trial and just play videos for people.
Yeah, most of the time they don't object to that, to doing your video, your witnesses by video and everything, but I could be wrong, obviously. I haven't tried a million cases,
but I just think
that it's not as effective.
The difference is, from your perspective, when you question, or the way you ask a question is materially based on the observations you have of the jury pool. You kind of get a feel for them and.
Well, and being in court, and that's one of the other things, so we can transition into another issue, is the seriousness of the atmosphere in court. Like, you show up, you have the marble floors, the high ceilings, the wood walls, everything. You sit in the courtroom with the judge in the black robe sitting up in her bench. I mean, you have this aura in court. And when you're asking people questions, I think it's more serious for the witnesses. They understand the seriousness of what's going on. The jurors can see that seriousness. It's just a different feeling when you're questioning somebody in court than versus a deposition where you're sitting at a chair at a table with not even having a suit on.
For me, it's like an adrenaline rush.
Absolutely. It's like butterflies in your stomach.
You sit there and, you see, to me, I have an adrenaline rush in trial.
It's like Friday Night Lights.
I just love it. I get pumped up. I ask the questions. You know, all that stuff, when you're sitting at a table,
it's not the same.
It's boring.
Yeah, it's just not the same. You don't have the same, I don't want to say interrupt the witness, but you don't, if they're saying something that you want to jump on, in trial you jump on, in a depo you let them talk for 20 more minutes and then you ask the next question after. It's just a totally different feel doing something in trial, in court, standing up at the podium, looking people in the eye. It just, it's very different for people that are actual trial lawyers, I think. Another issue that came up in some of the things I was reading is they're worried about internet connection issues and time is money sort of issue. So if something breaks down and you got to wait an hour for IT to come, well, if that expert's sitting there for an hour that you're paying $800 an hour to, that's another $800 that just went out. So, you know, there are issues with that too. If you're doing these live calls, or are they going to force you to video? Because then that's the other issue, is if you're doing Zoom, can you call everybody on live stream, or are you going to have to video it? I mean, record it.
Like in today's society, we definitely know there are people that don't have Zoom capability.
Absolutely.
But again, in our, Peter, yours and my legal lifetime, I think that that will change, especially with this next generation. Our kids, for example, they live and die by FaceTime, basically.
Sure. And I think that the older generation is the one that has the most problems with Zoom, but also they're the ones that are going to take the longest to get back to coming into society. And you can't just eliminate them from jury pools, because right. There are going to be people generationally that are similar to them, that if they're going to have a jury of their peers, should have some people in their age group in the jury pool.
And they're going to have situations like now where you have to provide them with the service. So now we do it for people if you have hearing problems or things like that. Well, if you are technically challenged, then they're going to have to provide a way to give you what you need in order to perform properly in the courtroom.
And it may turn into something like they sit in the deliberation room the whole time with a laptop in front of them while they're at the courthouse, but they're not going to be sitting next to anybody. I mean, that could be one potential way. I'm sure there's a million ways you could think of how you can still distance somebody that's, you know, of age of whatever, above 65 or whatever, supposed to still be socially distanced, and find a way to do that while still being in the courthouse.
Right. Although I wouldn't, obviously not a fan, as you've said, of this scenario, one really good thing is everything is recorded. Now, when you do an appeal, all you have is a cold transcript of what a court reporter typed. So a lot of times we'd love for the appellate court to see the judge's face when the judge might have said something nice to you, but they're really clenching their teeth.
Or hear how a lawyer said something in their closing.
Right.
Well, the words may not have been bad, but the what he was doing or whatever was.
That's an interesting concept of this, is you would actually have a live recording of the trial as opposed to a transcript.
And juries falling asleep or whatever, yeah. And we've argued that in voir dire many times. A person was sleeping. It's like, no, they weren't. It's they were.
Yeah, let's play the tape.
Exactly. Right. So that is interesting, and that'll make trials take even longer and appeals
take football, even longer. Like NFL games.
Exactly. So another big issue. I think we've talked about this on a podcast before, but people may not know. Jurors cannot go home and Google the case that they're handling. They can't do independent research. They can't ask their mom or their dad or their sister or their brother or their husband or wife or child what they think about this case that they are a juror on.
By can't, not supposed to.
Right. Well, yeah, they shouldn't. Right. They could be reprimanded. They could blow up the whole case by doing that. So they can't. I mean, obviously they physically can. But they think this is a major issue for a couple reasons. Number one, if you're doing this entire thing by Zoom in someone's house, who's to say somebody can't just sit next to them and listen the whole time and not be on Zoom? Who's to say that they can't be recording it and show it to somebody? Who's to say they're sitting there on their computer and during a break, they're not just going to Google the case?
But there's a but. Trials, for the most part, are public. So anybody, if you ever want to, when all this COVID stuff's over, go to the courthouse, ask where there's a trial, and go sit down and watch it. You can do it. So I don't think there's anything wrong with people listing in. I get your point.
But the point is, my wife is sitting right next to me watching this entire thing like a TV show, we go on a break, the first thing we're going to do is talk about it.
Right.
And it just opens that up and makes it easier for them to break that rule.
But I think, and again, that's going to be a matter of how they structure this stuff and the rules of deliberation, but the rules of procedure, like making them lock themselves in a room with nobody around them, whatever they have to do.
But exactly. And then again, enforcing that's going to be difficult. Security, privacy, and confidentiality issues. See anything with that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the trials are public. Anybody theoretically can walk into a trial and watch it. Other than national security trials, they're public.
Which they kick everybody out of the room anyway.
Right.
For that. But they do have jurors sometimes that stay in. Like the trial we had when they kicked everybody out, the jurors still stayed in and listened to the undercover cop testimony, stuff like that. So, I mean, that would be a security issue potentially in those kinds of criminal cases.
Well, technologically, I believe the FBI would have a way of blacking out the face on the video of the agent.
Yeah,
I think there are ways of doing it because they do it. They do
it. Well, no, but remember, in our trial, the jury could see his face, but nobody else could.
Right.
So,
but the camera doesn't have to be on his face when you do.
Well, how would
the
jury see his face if they're listening in by Zoom?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's like issues like that.
Yeah, but I'm sure you could selectively, and again, I don't know if it's Zoom, but there's a way to selectively black out which people can see what. For example,
I'm saying somebody sitting in the room next to me, and I'm a juror, and nobody knows they're there because they're not on camera, and now I put an undercover cop's face on the camera that is a national security issue.
Yeah, and they film it and put it on.
You're right.
Think some idiot wouldn't do that? People film themselves committing crimes.
Idiots is kind of the standard.
Yeah. So I think there are some security and confidentiality issues potentially that could come up, especially in criminal cases. Next issue, which this is one that we've had in Zoom mediations and just on conference calls, is conferring with your client. It's very easy, and if you watch a trial, you see lawyers lean over, talk to their clients lean over and say, that's a lie, ask him this, or, you know, this juror is falling asleep, or whatever it may be. That's going to be virtually impossible to do via Zoom. If you're not sitting in the same room as your client, how are they going to comment on what a witness is saying, just something that you can hear and vice versa?
Well, you're going to have a separate communication vehicle to talk to your client, like your cell phone.
That's complicated.
It is, and it's awkward, and it's time-consuming.
Because think about it. Let's just play that scenario out. We're all on a Zoom call that has a microphone and a video. I stop in the middle of the other lawyer asking questions to a witness. I make sure my Zoom call is on mute. I call my client on my cell phone where everybody can see that I'm on my cell phone. My client picks up their cell phone. Everybody can see they're on their cell phone. I have to confirm that my client is on mute because, God forbid, they didn't click the button. Then we have a conversation. Then we all hang up and unmute our Zoom call. We're on like 15 questions in now for a question that they were commenting on or that I was commenting on. That's almost impossible to, in the fly, in the moment of trial where things are going fast and questions are being answered. Sometimes you just need to make a quick note. The client says something. That's going to be virtually impossible to do in different locations.
It is, and these are all things they have to find solutions for, especially in criminal cases, because you've got to be able. They cannot stop you constitutionally from conferring with your client.
Right.
And so they've got to develop.
And it's really important in civil cases as well.
Right. They've got to find a way of doing it.
All right, this is the last one that I have. I don't know if you guys have any other ones, but this one is not really a rule, but it's something that I think is really important, and I want to hear what you guys think. What about seeing either the victim's family, the defendant's family, the plaintiff's family, whoever it may be, in the courtroom where jurors can see either the whole family is there supporting this husband who is, you know, accused of cheating on his wife or maybe beating his wife or whatever, and his wife is sitting back there the whole time supporting him throughout the entire trial? I think that has an effect on a juror. The whole victim's family is there in a PI case where they've been injured and, you know, paralyzed. The whole family's there crying the whole time. That has an effect on people in the courtroom, jurors, judges, witnesses, everybody. That all goes out the window because you're not going to see the gallery. You're not going to see who's there supporting plaintiff, defendant, victim, anything.
You know, you're not making – that's a good argument for us because we know that emotion – and the visual makes a big difference, but
legally speaking,
right, it's not supposed to.
Right.
So when you try to argue that, you say, "Oh no, wait a minute! What are you arguing here? You know, emotion is not supposed to carry the day here. It's supposed to be just the cold hard facts." Which is why when we go all the way back to the beginning, which is why a lot of people don't choose judges to be the trier of fact, because it's the common belief that judges do it on a very cold, unemotional basis, whereas jurors are far more emotional and subject to emotional
involvement. Right, but these are the way, if it totally didn't matter, they wouldn't let the family sit behind them, okay? But they do. So it is something that has come into cases since the beginning of time that's been a part of the cases. It's been commented on in sentencing. I mean, I've heard judges say, you know, they weren't back there the whole time, and now somebody comes up to say something about this defendant or whatever. They notice it. It's not just the jury. The judges notice it, too.
I think the art will follow the science.
That's the problem.
The
but that's
art
the
will
problem.
Follow the science. And let's just talk.
We're getting rid of the art.
Yeah,
of trial.
Well, not about getting rid of it. We're changing it because let's talk about what you and I talked about. We realized on some of our Zoom meetings and our hearings, it kind of looks weird just standing there, you know, sitting there in your chair with the camera, you know, focus on us. What are we doing? We're contemplating putting a green screen to put our, you know, the logos of our law firm behind it just to make it look a little bit more snazzy. The art will follow the science. Well, people will find a way.
Okay, and I'm sure we can come up with more issues, and I'm sure anybody listening can come up with some issues of their own. But what's interesting now about this jury trial that took place in Texas that we mentioned in the beginning is it was not even actually a real jury trial. It was what they call a summary jury trial, which, in my opinion, sounds a lot like a mock jury. But what they did was, it's a week-long case, but they summarized the evidence. The lawyers did, after picking a jury, they summarized the evidence, told the jury, which is why a week-long trial only took a day or two. The jury deliberated, the jury came up with a verdict, and that verdict is not binding. Because after this jury actually rendered a verdict, the lawyers and the clients, the parties of the case, went and mediated the case a few days later. Once they heard what this jury would have done, it was able to help them settle the case at mediation. So this wasn't even a binding verdict, which makes sense and why it's perfect for kind of this test case. But I think that it was a big step in how this could go moving forward. So what do you think will come from this Zoom jury trial? We've talked about the issues, but what do you think are the next kind of steps?
I think the big issue is that the art of the trial process is going to be affected. But at the end of the day, I think what you're going to see is hybrids. There will be sections of jury trials or portions of trials that are done, via Zoom. And then the parties can take those sections and make a decision whether or not they want to, go forward, have a real live trial, things like that.
So I think one of the hybrid proceedings that may come out of this, and some of the articles that talked about this Zoom trial mentioned that maybe voir dire, meaning picking the jury, will happen by Zoom so that you don't have to bring that many potential jurors in one room, opening them up to potential COVID, infections or whatever. But once you pick the 6 or 12 jurors that you're going to have actually on your jury, then you have that trial live and in the courtroom because they are actually going to be trying that case.
Well, one of the positives, and again, I'm not in favor of it, but one of the positives would be that you can avoid tainting the rest of the jurors with an answer from one jury. That's something we really worry about in criminal cases, especially like a murder case, where you ask somebody, well, have you read anything in the newspaper? And somebody jumps up and says, yeah, I did. I read where this guy shot that guy. Well, that just taints the whole panel. So now you can do individual voir dire. It'll be easier and less time consuming to do one juror at a time if you do it by this method.
Well, from my perspective in the civil side, I don't worry about it. I'm actually, it's part of my strategy to try to taint the jury, to make them understand.
Anybody that drives drunk and hits somebody should, be damned forever.
Well, that's why maybe it's going to be civil cases. This may slowly come into effect. I don't see it happening in the next 20 or 30 years in a criminal case.
Okay, so when talking about what may happen, anything else you think may come of this that may change or adapt, or you think we may just go full-blown Zoom jury trials eventually?
I think there will come a point where things become far more virtual than they are now. Not today, not tomorrow. But at the end of the day, the technology, the law normally follows technology.
Who do you think benefits from this? It sounds like you think prosecutors will.
Prosecutors will definitely benefit.
And we think defense attorneys
absolutely.
In civil cases. So, of course, everything that we don't do will benefit. I'm sure that's how all lawyers think. But usually defense lawyers want jurors to not be heavily invested in the case in civil cases so they don't give a really big verdict or feel really bad for the victim. And I guess it's kind of the same in criminal cases, but reverse. Is they don't want anybody feeling bad for the defendant, or they want them to just take what the cop or what the prosecutor says as Bible and just convict the guy based on that.
We think, again, defense lawyers think that jurors come into the courtroom pro-prosecution. And so if you're going to change their mind, you have to do it in a way that you're facing them, you're looking at them, you're talking to them.
You want them to take it seriously.
You want them to
look at this guy or girl and how this is going to affect their life forever to make sure they're making a serious, informed decision.
And that's not going to happen unless they can trust you as a defense lawyer.
Right.
And that's not going to happen unless you have some personal relationship with them and it's not a cold proceeding. I do think, though, What's going to happen is we're going to see some rules coming out after this virus thing's over. Rules coming out for non-jury virtual trials. I think that's a thing that's coming.
Okay. So you're going to see it in your rules committee.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I think that makes total sense. I think in judicial economy, that'll help too. Okay, last part. In-person jury trials. Do you think they are going to start back up, and are they going to force people to come into the courtroom, sit right next to somebody else, and do a jury trial? We're sorry for the smoke alarm. It's just going off. There's nothing we can do about it. Blame Park and Eliezer.
I heard today, I had actually a Zoom hearing today, and the judge tells me that at this point, they're still scheduling the trials for October, November, and December this year. There is no indication that they're actually going to be able to do them, but just to keep them on.
Well, another judge told us that all the trials are canceled through 2020.
Right, that's the different jurisdiction.
Right, but every judge thinks something different is going to happen. But the real point is, do you think that they're actually going to force people to come sit down and be a jury? Or are they going to limit the pool to just young people with no health issues at all? Because that affects a jury of your peers.
Well, not just that. How about the age of the lawyer, age of the client? If you are in that high-risk category, are they going to be able to force you to come into court when, let's say, you're in phase two? All right. Well, phase two is still a phase that says it's an active emergency, a national emergency, and people that are over a certain age need to take special precautions. Plus, I tell you what, it's going to be kind of hilarious to see a jury trial with everybody wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really is kind of a strange thing, because especially if it's a robbery where your client wore a mask in the robbery. So it's going to be a really bizarre situation. And
it is.
You know, we're coming into some really
bizarre
times. And
you can't see facial expressions with the mask on and all sorts of stuff. So
it's not this next. I think this year's blown. I think 2020 is blown.
For sure, I agree.
But there will come a point where, you know, Corona will just become part of our lives, just like the influenza, the flu became part of our lives, and we'll kind of go back to some sort of normalcy. But I don't think that, like what you said, we're going to put this off. There will come a point where they'll say, oh, this person's elderly, he's infirm, and they'll appear via Zoom for jury selection.
Yeah, that may be true. That may be something that changes, but there's also something, and we've talked about it on jury selection podcast, how you get excused absences basically from jury selection if you have a serious illness or threat of that. So, I mean, a lot of people are going to be able to just call in and use that to get out of jury selection
or
as well.
If you're 70 years old or older.
Right.
Actually, 65 is what officially the age for the high risk.
Okay.
Is 65.
Right.
But 70,
is what I said, I think, in that
podcast. But 70 is the age where you can opt out of jury trials.
I didn't know they had a rule.
Yeah, and once you get to a certain age,
you can call in. It's an excused absence, basically. So,
you mean without the virus?
Yes,
without
the virus. Oh, yeah, just the normal rules.
Okay, yeah.
So then, lastly, some people were talking about how they could set the courtroom up completely differently in order to socially distance, meaning you and your client 6 feet apart at counsel table, the jury chairs further apart, leaving every other row empty in the gallery, things like that to try to socially distance.
But that really can't. You can't have your client 6 feet from you when you're sitting there trying to talk to him or trying to strategize or passing notes. That just can't happen. It just, under the current circumstance, you can't have a trial. Things are going to have to change for there to actually
under
be
the
live
certain,
trials.
The today, current CDC guidelines.
As we see it today,
right,
yes.
Right.
And the technology is going to catch up. I mean, you know, Peter and I, when we try cases together because of the technology, you know, we use our iPads and we can, you know, text each other back and forth. That will become part of the
jury
process.
Yeah, I mean, they could
really
do some cool stuff like sharing your screens with all the juries, with all the jurors. I mean, that could be really cool. But then again, you miss their face. I don't really think it's going to be perfect. I mean, I don't know what we're going to have to do.
Because let's be real. Remember, we had a couple trials where we used our technology and just kind of razzle-dazzled the jury. They just thought it was cool. I think there will be some novelty to doing some of the stuff virtually by Zoom.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. But so that is our take on the video conference or Zoom jury trials. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll be back with you next time.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at tragoslaw.com.